said Rincewind. One star bright eye looked up at him.
Cohenish, my name, boy.
Bethan's hands stopped moving.
Cohen, she said. Cohen the Barbarian?
The very shame.
Hang on, said Rincewind. Cohen's a great big chap, neck like a bull, got chest muscles like a sack of footballs. I mean, he's the disc's greatest warrior, a legend in his own lifetime. I remember my granddad telling me he saw him. My granddad. He faltered under the gimlet gaze. Oh, he said. Oh, of course. Sorry.
Yes, said Cohen and sighed. That's right, boy. I'm a lifetime in my own legend.
Gosh, said Rincewind. How old are you exactly?
87.
But you were the greatest, said Bethan.
Bards still sing songs about you.
Cohen shrugged and gave a little yelp of pain.
I never get any royalties, he said.
He looked moodily at the snow.
That's the saga of my life. 80 years in the business and what have I got to show for it? Backache, piles, bad digestion, and 100 different recipes for soup. Soup! I hate soup.
Bethan's forehead wrinkled.
Soup?
Soup, explained Rincewind.
Yeah, soup, said Cohen miserably. It's me teeth, you see. No one takes you seriously when you got no teeth. They say, sit down by the fire, Grandad, and have some soup.
Cohen looked sharply at Rincewind.
That's a nasty cough you have there, boy.
Rincewind looked away, unable to look Bethan in the face. Then his heart sank. Twoflower was still leaning against the tree, peacefully unconscious, and looking as reproachful as was possible in the circumstances. Cohen appeared to remember him too. He got unsteadily to his feet and shuffled over to the tourist. He thumbed both eyes open, examined the greys, felt the pulse.
He's gone, he said.
Dead, said Rincewind. In the debating chamber of his mind, a dozen emotions got to their feet and started shouting. Relief was in full spate when shock cut in on a point of order, and then bewilderment, terror, and loss started a fight which was ended only when shame slunk in from next door to see what all the row was about.
No, said Cohen thoughtfully. Not exactly. Just gone.
Gone where?
I don't know, said Cohen, but I think I know someone who might have a map.
Far out on the snowfield, half a dozen pinpoints of red light glowed in the shadows.
"He's not far away," said the leading wizard, peering into the small crystal sphere.
There was a general mutter from the ranks behind him, which roughly meant that however far away Rincewind was, he couldn't be further than a nice hot bath, a good meal, and a warm bed. Then the wizard, who was tramping along in the rear, stopped and said,
"Listen."
They listened. There were the subtle sounds of winter beginning to close its grip on the land, the creak of rocks, the muted scuffling of small creatures in their tunnels under the blanket of snow. In a distant forest, a wolf howled, felt embarrassed when no one joined in, and stopped. There was the silver sleeting sound of moonlight. There was also the wheezing noise of half a dozen wizards trying to breathe quietly.
"I can't hear a thing,"
one began.
"Shh! All right.
Then they all heard it. A tiny, distant crunching, like something moving very quickly over the snow crust.
"Wolves?" said a wizard.
They all thought about hundreds of lean, hungry bodies leaping through the night.
"No," said the leader. "It's too regular. Perhaps it's a messenger."
It was louder now, a crisp rhythm like someone eating celery very fast.
"I'll send up a flare," said the leader.
He picked up a handful of snow, rolled it into a ball, threw it up into the air, and ignited it with a stream of octarine fire from his fingertips. There was a brief, fierce blue glare. There was silence. Then another wizard said,
"You daft bugger, I can't see a thing now."
That was the last thing they heard before something fast, hard, and noisy cannoned into them out of the darkness and vanished into the night. When they dug one another out of the snow, all they could find was a tight, pressed trail of little footprints. Hundreds of little footprints, all very close together,